We are chatting now with Comptroller Sean Scanlon, and a couple of updates came through from your office this week, Comptroller. First thing was an annual loss report. What is that?
What that is that 2 years ago, I decided that because every taxpayer dollar matters, we should publicize how much the state loses every year of those tax dollars. And I had a belief when I did that, that if I use transparency and accountability, the number of things that the state loses would go down. And sure enough, that's what happened. We started off in the first year with $13 million of annual loss. And this year, we reduced that number by $5 million to be about $8 million. And I think, again, going back to this basic principle that every dollar we get is a dollar somebody gave us, we want to be good stewards of that money. Not all of these things that we experience losses for are our fault by any stretch of the imagination, so I want to be clear about that. But when we lose the dollar, we lose the taxpayer dollar, and I think we need to be better safeguards to the extent that we can of that money.
This probably sounds like a silly question, but how do you lose dollars? I mean, $13 million is a lot. I mean, and then I'm glad to see that the number came down substantially in a year, but how do you lose dollars?
So it's not losing dollars. These are losses in the sense that last year, one of the big things that got attention was when UConn won the national championship, there was a riot at stores and there was property damage. Environmental police officer's car got broken into and things were stolen from that car, right? So it's not always that they like lost a printer. It's that there are things that they lose or there's a loss to the state. And we define that in the report probably better than you and I are doing it on the air right now. But the basic principle is if we lose something, we should make a better effort to not lose it in the future if we can control it. And I think this report demonstrates that we're doing that.
So just to make sure I understand you, Comptroller, for example, we budget a certain amount that we know is going to go, let's just say, to UConn. But because we didn't expect to have the property damage and that did cost, you know, a certain amount of money, that is considered a loss.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's exactly right.
Okay. Does this report also look at when money is used fraudulently at all? I know I've been seeing, and I know you and I talked about this before, but a lot of reports where money is being either, you know, not accounted for correctly or misspent or not allocated appropriately. I feel like I'm seeing more and more of those reports, audits coming out, I should say. Does that get reflected in this report or is that something totally separate?
It's pretty much something that's separate. You know, the auditors, which a lot of different cooks in the kitchen here, but the state auditors put out reports every year about every agency and what they spend money on. And in those reports, there's a lot of publicity that sometimes they spotlight different things that were improper. This is every year, whenever any state agency or employee loses something, they by law have to report that to my office. But until 2 years ago, that just collected dust somewhere on a shelf. I decided to start publicizing that, again, as a way to try to bring more transparency and accountability. But the auditors are still doing their thing. I'm doing my thing. At the end of the day, the goal of both those things is just to not have as much loss or not have as much bad practices going on.
And again, we're talking to Comptroller Sean Scanlon. And so this annual loss report, which you said that you started 2 years ago, is it something that is a public document? Can people access it?
Yeah. The whole point of it was that I wanted the people of Connecticut to access it and to be able to see this and to see which agencies are making progress and which agencies need to do more work. But I'm proud to say that I think through enhanced staff training and more personal vigilance, I think we're getting better. And I think that that's a benefit to the taxpayers.
And another thing too, Comptroller, does it show in there? So you know how, I'm just going to give like an example that is not real, but say you have a department, they have 20 roles or 20 positions that they have filled, and maybe they decide to add a content creator or a cybersecurity expert. That is not a role that they had on their payroll initially. Do the departments also see, I don't want to say losses, but money that they had to spend to either, you know, maybe increase somebody's salary or to add positions to a department? Does that also get accounted for in this annual report?
No, but everything that we do to what you're describing is online on a website called Open Connecticut. So if you really want to nerd out and see what we do and dive into all these things, we've made that available to the people of Connecticut through this website called Open Connecticut, where you can literally see what every single agency spends money on, what every single state employee makes, what their benefits are, what their pension is, all of that. You know, thanks to my predecessor, whose name was Kevin Lembo, he made a big push to sort of digitize all of this and make it very accessible to people. I've continued that throughout my tenure here as the comptroller. And so whether it's you want to dive into what the state is losing or you want to dive into what the state is buying, all that stuff can be available on our website, which is osc.ct.gov.
And we'll link that to our website as well with the Comptroller's podcast once it's posted after the show. Again, Comptroller Sean Scanlon is here. And another thing that you released this week, Comptroller, had to do with paraeducators and supporting them better. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, paraeducators are some of the most important people in our kids' classrooms, but unfortunately, they're some of the least paid individuals in all of education. And what we found was that a lot of these paraeducators were leaving the education workforce because they didn't often have affordable health insurance, and they weren't able to afford the health insurance they were offered because they don't make enough money to cover either the deductible or the premium. And so 2 years ago, the legislature basically said to me, hey, you know, can you try to figure out something because you're the healthcare guy? Here's $5 million. Can you figure out something that helps solve this problem? And we did that by basically calculating all of, A, how many paras there were across the state. And the answer is there's about 12,000. And then figuring out how many of them get offered health insurance. And if they do, what we could do to help them. And we basically came up with this program that helps them afford their insurance. And this morning, we are announcing that 7,400 paras across the state are going to be able to get some help with this. In most cases, it's a 70% reduction of their total amount that they owe for their deductible if they're on a high deductible plan, and it's about a 50% deduction of their premium if they're on a premium-based plan. And at the end of the day, the whole goal of this is to help keep these people that are very important in the classroom.
How do you choose? I don't have the number offhand, but how do you choose which 7,400 qualify for this? I don't know if that's like close to the amount of paraeducators we have in the state of Connecticut, but
12,000 paras.
Okay.
And there's four kinds of paras. We're going to get really in the weeds here. Number one is you don't get offered any health insurance. Number two, you get offered insurance, but you don't take it because maybe you're on your husband or your wife's plan. Number three is you have a high deductible health plan. And number four, you have a premium-based PPO plan. So obviously the first two buckets are not relevant to us because they either don't get offered anything or they don't take anything. So that's where we get to the 7,400. So okay. If there's 12,000 total, you minus the 5,000, you get to the 7,000. And that 7,000 are the people that we help. So anybody that basically gets offered insurance through their school district is getting some benefit from this program. I'll give you a couple of examples. There's 188 paras in the Fairfield School District. They're getting $357,000 of support. Stratford, there's 50 paras, $64,000. Milford, 107 paras, $131,000. So again, this is not just good for the paras, but it's also good for these municipalities because the municipal taxpayers do not have to pay this, right? It's benefiting their kids, but it's not, you know, we've talked about this on your show, unfunded mandates, right? We're not passing this cost on to the municipalities and therefore they're passing it to the taxpayers. This is state money that we're using to help both the paras and the towns keep these people in the classroom.
Yeah, and they really are so essential. You know, you talk about Milford, which is the town I happen, the city, I should say, that I happen to live in. And we, you know, like many towns and cities have had to see our education budget get cut. And one of the first, I would say, roles on the chopping block, or one of the first items, if you will, not that they are items, but are paraeducators. And I'm seeing it in real time. You know, I know, for example, a high school teacher in one of our public high schools here, has a classroom full of students who she could really use a paraeducator. But we just don't have one. There isn't one accessible for her. And so I would love to see, certainly I know this is a brand new program, but I'd love to see if this is a really strong tool in retaining and attracting people to becoming a paraeducator. Cause you know, like you said, it's not like they're making bank, but they are such essential roles that I think we're slowly getting more aware of the need that we have for them in our public school sector across the state, obviously.
Yeah. And I think it is making a difference. And, you know, I sign every check that the state sends, and I don't often get thank you letters, but I get a lot of thank you letters, believe it or not, from these paraeducators who take the time to write me and tell me that literally this has helped them stay in this job. And, you know, just yesterday we did a press conference to sort of announce this in New Haven, and, you know, a couple of the paras that got up to speak talked about that very thing. So, listen, this is a complicated world and there's a lot going on, but I do believe that this is helping to make a difference. And if we can do that, the end result of that is that we're making a positive difference in a child's education. And at the end of the day, that's really what we're here to do in the government. And I'm glad we're doing it here.
Yeah, absolutely. Comptroller, really quickly, only because I have you here and you had mentioned you're kind of known as the healthcare guy. I was curious, and I know this is obviously separate from your job, but a little bit related. I'm hearing reports because of all the chaos with open enrollment. I know you and I have discussed this with what's happening from the government shutdown and the trickle-down effect here in Connecticut. And even when I checked in with Senator Blumenthal last, he was saying, you know, yeah, there's some bipartisan talk, but no, sort of, it feels like light at the end of the tunnel, at least as far as finding a negotiation, at least today. But I'm hearing talk that more and more carriers in Connecticut are basically giving either very hard deadlines or are just completely cutting commissions for brokers, essentially. And I'm wondering, as I know the state has made efforts in the past to have a public option to make obviously healthcare more affordable for people in Connecticut, despite what the federal government does and does not do. But are we looking at a possibility of healthcare brokers kind of out of jobs soon, just with the way the healthcare industry is going, in your professional opinion?
Well, look, there's a lot of uncertainty right now and a lot of things that are up in the air. I have been meeting with the two carriers that are offering insurance on the Access Health Exchange about what we're going to do if and when the president and Congress do not decide to extend the all-important enhanced premium tax credits that we've talked about on your show that basically are helping over 150,000 people in our state afford their health insurance. And just starting this past Monday, all those individuals, about 158,000 people, got letters telling them that their premiums were going up in some cases by 75%. And at the end of the day, what we know from just basic logic and history is that when these individuals who are living check to check to begin with get these big bills, some of them, if not many of them, will make the decision to just bail on their insurance and they'll go back to being uninsured, which will cost all of us more in the long run and potentially jeopardize the exchange and the whole system that goes with it, such as the brokers that you're talking about. And so it's a very, very fragile time. And I know that we're sort of living in a time where, you know, it's a lot of finger pointing going on with politicians and blaming the other side. But at the end of the day, my take on this is that Democrats and Republicans and the president in Washington need to get their act together. They need to resolve the government shutdown and they need to extend these premium tax credits, because a lot of people are going to be really hurt by this. And all of us will be hurt in some way, because when those individuals decide to make that impossible choice of going uninsured, they're still going to get sick. They're still going to show up at the ER. And all of us then pay for that in our own health insurance premiums, because the hospitals just pass that on in the form of uncompensated care. So very fragile moment. And the governor is very engaged on this. I'm very engaged in it. And we're talking to the brokers and the insurance carriers and the people. But it's going to be, unfortunately, a little bit of a wait and see based on what happens down in Washington.
Comptroller Sean Scanlon, I always appreciate you giving us the time here on WICC. Thank you so much. Be well.
Good to be on. Bye.